Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And I want to welcome back the beautiful, beloved, precious, dear Joanna Cherry.
Hi, Iris.
Hi. Thank you for being with us again.
Thank you.
I feel like we should tell, you know, sort of the cosmic work we do on the inner. And then I feel like the best thing that Joanna and I do together is that we unearth core issues in ourselves and the entire evolution of souls.
Yeah. Yeah, and this seems to be the time right now when things are changing so rapidly in human consciousness and planetary consciousness and upliftment and awakening. It's just, it's time for all those deep core pains and troubles and sorrows to come up, you know, to come up for healing. And, of course, that means we have to know about them and feel them at least a little bit in order to go through them or to go above them, you know. But for so many thousands and thousands of years, they have been suppressed. They've been put down. They've been hidden from our consciousness because we weren't ready to deal with them or see them. And we could kind of get along without doing that, you know, and
drank a lot.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, actually, that it's caused a lot of addiction, smoking and drinking and, you know, all the cocaine and all that other stuff.
Pushing down feelings.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the time when they really can't be hidden anymore. They can't stay hidden like they have been for so long, and they're coming up big time. So, but it's not easy, but it is wonderful at the same time.
Yes, it is. Well, where was it you read the other day about living, what was it? Our natural state of being is living and fully embracing a sweet, free, I think it was,
well, it was unburdened.
Unburdened life.
Yeah.
And who wrote that?
That was Emma Curtis Hopkins in her book, Scientific Christian Mental Practice, which I've been often reading before I go to bed. Just kind of gets me in a kind of enlightened state for sleeping.
Yeah.
She's really wonderful. Emma Curtis Hopkins. She has a number of books out, and she's very, very pure. She's not very gregarious. She doesn't go in for lots of, you know, humor or things like that, but she does, include wonderful stories of healing in all of her work. And I mean, you read the very first page of this book, and I was just kind of bowled over. She was talking about various saints or well-known philosophers in the past, and how they all sickened and died. So so that meant that there was something lacking in their relationship with God or in their thinking about God. So that kind of really got me going. And when I read the thing about a sweet, free, unburdened life, you know, which is exactly what I've been working for. And actually, in many ways, I do have that. But when I read that, I found myself like 5 minutes later going, no, that's not right. You know, I mean, and really feeling that and really meaning that, that's not right. And so I thought, good grief, what the heck is that going on in me? So I've been tuning in about it, and I just understood that there's such a huge, vast, in fact, I think it's reduced now because we've been working on it with Earth Service work, you know, you and me and others. But I just saw at that time this vast, swamp of human idea and belief and knowing that life is struggle. Life is hard, that it is burdened, it isn't sweet. You know, or maybe it has some sweet moments, but basically it's, you know, it's...
Now get back to the shit.
Yeah, exactly. So I was really taken aback by that, and it sort of felt like if you stuck your toe in, you'd be sucked under, or if you tried to do any healing, it would just be wasted. But that's not true. So we've been doing some healing for all of humanity, for like these baseline beliefs that many of us have had, including myself, and I think including you. And so we've been able to sort of weaken the underpinnings of it. And but we still have, most of us still have the belief in ourselves, and so we need to do the individual work that allows us to go through it and past it.
Well,
so that's what we're doing.
Well,
gosh, excuse me, go ahead.
Excuse me.
No. I just was going to add that I felt like I really made good progress on it the other day. Just the feeling of the deep, deep goodness. And because basically what this is based on, this thought of a sweet, free, unburdened life that is natural to us is based on the knowing that God and life is good through and through and through, and that this goodness is meant for each of us individually. It's not just sort of a wash, a whitewash, or an overwash of life in general. It's good for each and every one of us, not only human beings, but animals and blades of grass and trees and everything. And I found myself just kind of at first accepting it, but then things in me have come up, and I actually woke up with a sick stomach this morning because it's such a big thing. And I was meditating on it and feeling stuck and not getting very far, and I asked Spirit to give me a message about it, and they said, you know this, it's just ego fear. It's ego fear that stops any person from receiving all of the goodness of God. And so I was like, oh, yes, of course, you know, of course. And so I felt that the lack of sort of humility, I guess, also in just being open to the goodness of every kind that is meant for us. And of course, you and I, our understanding is that includes immortality and rejuvenation of the physical body. But in regular life, if it doesn't want to go that far for a person, it certainly includes health and wealth and happy relationships and just goodness of every kind that is desired in life. Pretty amazing stuff, huh?
It is. And, well, I had like about 17 things I wanted to add or ask about, or and now they're all completely gone. They met in the middle of my mind and exploded. But it was a light explosion.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is. I think especially spiritual teachers have had this core issue belief that you had to be, like, for instance, I'll give you a teacher of mine who was just very, very, very clear about bringing forth the truth. She was just a very clear channel, but then she didn't live like that.
Uh-huh.
And she had horrible things go on with men and horrible things in her body, and I mean, excuse my judgment, but it was painful things, you know,
yeah.
that that I didn't think were consistent with the message. And I said to her, you know, you don't have to do this. You could accept the message yourself. And she said, Iris, mastery is you get in the ship and you ride through the storm. It's not you leave your ship in the port. And to me, it's not leaving your ship in the port to just go ahead and have greater and greater happiness. I don't want to sail through Typhoon Mary.
Well, I think what she was probably talking about was that all of the things in her that didn't allow her to accept the kind of life she was talking about, coming up to be healed, that was her storm. You know, that was what she had to sail through to get to the other side, to get to the acceptance of it. And I think that's probably what all of us have to sail through to get into the full happiness and acceptance of our full, enormous, amazing good. You know, go ahead. I have a beautiful master friend that I'm lucky enough to have a picture of that a beautiful artist did. And this friend is Babaji. He's an immortal master. He's been in a youthful body for 5,000 years.
On Earth,
yes. And he has a group of immortals that he stays with up near the town of Badrinath in India, far, far northern India. And I was contemplating this stuff about the goodness of life, you know, and looking at this wondrous painting. And I just realized, he showed me, I just kind of got more than I ever have gotten before, that his whole body, his whole immortal, youthful body, beautiful body, is built on this knowing of the absolute goodness of life and of goddess and of God, of the universe. It's built on that. And he is also the one that just brings through, I mean, somebody is hungry next to him, he just brings through food from the ethers, nice, hot, delicious food. Or one of his disciples, Lahiri Mahasaya, needed the experience, the karmic experience, of a beautiful palace before he could go into full enlightenment. And Babaji just manifested this palace out of the air, and it was there for maybe 24 hours, and Lahiri got to have this experience of all the gold and all the jewels and everything that he had desired on some level of himself, and it quenched that desire. He was fulfilled. It was done, and then the palace was repoofed back into the ethers. But this is Babaji, and of course any of us, when we get to be this one with life or with God, Goddess, Spirit, any of us can do this. It's not limited to one person. We're all meant to be masters, and we're all on the way to becoming masters, no matter what we're going through or where we are right now or where we feel we're not, you know, or how many flaws or faults or whatnot we see, you know, in ourselves. And so it's a pretty amazing journey. But that kind of seeing that he had built his whole body and life on that knowing of goodness really helped me at that time. So and then later on that evening, I've been reading the Twilight Saga, and I'm on the last book of it, and there's a real weird, I won't tell in case other people are reading, but there's a real weird, difficult thing that takes place, and it was just kind of gnarly to read about, and it kind of, I pulled myself down through it, and then I realized that was sort of my right progress in life, was that I was believing in all this goodness and wonder, but then the other part of me that doesn't believe that said, no way, here, read this. You know, and so I've been kind of struggling to to come over that part of myself, basically ego in us, in each of us, that doesn't believe this truth or this goodness, and get back into it, or get newly into it, I guess, or more strongly into it. I would be more truthful.
Well, you know, when you were talking about the ego and what the ego does to prevent going into just living from that, living and fully embracing a sweet, free, light life, is I can hardly talk about it. I can hardly talk about it. And I did a lot of meditating on it before, and I was thinking, so it seems like my ego, as I've gone, every time I've taken a leap or gone into a greater octave of good, which includes just a different frequency, it's a whole different way of living, and I feel like I've evolved like that a number of times, many times.
Yeah.
And every time that I was going to jump in, you know, quit just sticking my toe in and seeing how it felt and seeing, oh, is this something I could do and all of that, was that my ego would hold up my worst monster picture, which was that I would lose my husband, that we were too different, that we would be separated, that, you know, nan and nan and nan, all of this stuff. And then I would go ahead and do it.
That's really gutsy, too.
And he is the thing I feel like I have to give the most to people, is that I understood and felt and knew and accepted being in love with someone for 42 years.
Uh-huh.
And having him be in love with me and having it be joyous.
Uh-huh.
I felt like that was the thing I was supposed to give. So, but also I was afraid every time I took a leap that I would be left alone.
Uh-huh.
And why am I telling you this? Oh, I feel like you have worked with me over and over and over on really accepting that sweet, free, light life, because I had it.
Yeah, it was right there.
Okay, but I also feel, I also feel, how can I have that now when he has passed on? And for me, the ingredient of having a sweet, free, light life is being with him. It's I feel like I manifested the thing that we're not talking about. You know, it wasn't sweet, free, or light,
right,
to lose him. And I know I'm responsible for my manifestation, and it feels incumbent on me to make this turn out to be a win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, it's for you, too, and it's also for him. And since it's based on the truth of life, that life is basically goodness, I don't know, I think it was such a huge loss, and such a lot of grief accompanied it. And the counterpart or the truth is that life is whole here and now, and it is good. here and now. And so somehow or another, focusing on it in this moment, no matter what has gone before, is enough, you know, or can become enough again, let's say. So that, I guess, I don't know if that's, I don't want to speak like I'm an authority because I've never lost someone that I loved that dearly to death. But it's just kind of these things are coming to me to say.
Good. Well, I also know, and this is the most important part for me, I think, that, you know, there were days when I was with him that I felt desperately unhappy just because I was wearing this load of guilt and couldn't let myself feel and experience the joy of having what I had.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And there are also times now when he has passed over that I feel and embrace this sweet, free, light life, and it's just this minute. It's like he could be downstairs.
Uh-huh.
Or do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't exact, but I'm really acknowledging that it is all within me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of the same way that I haven't felt my usual pull to nature this summer. I'm usually out in it a lot. And it just seems to have something to do with feeling like it's all here. Everything is here. I don't have to go anywhere. So that would be true of, you know, and look at Stephen Hawking, this beautiful, amazing scientist, philosopher, has written A Brief History of Time and many, many other amazing and wonderful books. And he's in a wheelchair. The only thing he can do, I think he holds something in his mouth that he can work a computer with. The rest of his body is totally paralyzed. And Eckhart Tolle, who has written The Power of Now and A New Earth and other wonderful books that a lot of people are attending to now. And Eckhart was a professor in the same university where Stephen was, and he ran into him one day, and Stephen was in his wheelchair, and he was being wheeled through and into a class or something, and Eckhart was struck by Stephen being fully in acceptance of exactly where he was. He was right here. He was right now. He was happy. He was content. He was awake and alive. And you know, in this totally paralyzed body that other people had to help him to get around in. And so it's really our consciousness. It's really our consciousness of this here and now moment and the goodness of it, I think, that is the key to our lives. And maybe it's also the key to letting ego just kind of slide down the tubes and really accepting all of the goodness of life. I have a feeling the two are very deeply connected. And also there's this book, I think it's Bruno Bettelheim, who is the author, who was in a concentration camp for years. And he wound up with the complete knowing that it is not the circumstances that determine our happiness, it is how we choose to feel about them, how we choose to see them. So no matter what our circumstance might be in life, if we choose to be accepting and happy in this moment and alive and aware, then nothing can take that away from us. Nothing can take that joy away from us. Nothing. It's so amazing. It's such an amazing realization to get, you know? So for you, I mean, this loss of the love of your life, somehow that, I guess that applies, is here and now, everything, like you just said yourself, everything is here. You have everything right now. When you're awake and alive to it, and the same is true for me and for every person listening, and it's an amazing truth about the goodness of life. And I can see that I've sort of been, just in talking this way, I've sort of maybe been going about it backwards, that, you know, I've just sort of tried to feel into the goodness of life rather than just simply being here and now and opening my eyes and being aware where all the goodness already is.
Well, the feeling into the goodness of life is that sticking your toe in again. And I feel like people's egos have said, if you put your hand in the cookie jar, there will be an equal and opposite, like you will suffer for this.
Yeah.
I think that's a core issue that has been here. And I think that has come with not identifying with our true self, from identifying with the ego and those pictures and thought forms, and believing them.
Yeah. And it is true that we've had a whole lot of past lives in which, most of us, in which gnarly things have happened. So we've got that sort of thing to clear as well. And that sort of thing that says you're not safe to accept happiness, or if you're the tall poppy, you're going to get cut down, and things like that. So there's a lot of healing going on all levels of Earth, and for each person, past lives, and kind of sending our own healing back into our ancestry to help them become healed, since we can change the past. So it's truly amazing what is taking place right now on this planet. It's truly amazing. I understand that there's like many thousands of civilizations who have ships, invisible ships in our atmosphere that are just observing and or helping. A lot of them are helping too, for this transition to take place into a world of ascended masters, of enlightened people who are loving and kind and true to each other, and who really do feel the reality of goodness, not only of life, but of their own being, of their own hearts and minds through and through. That the stuff that's been here, that's been dark and difficult, is cleared and gone, and it leaves us free to be who we really are, which is really an angel or a god, a goddess, since we are a reflection of the divine. We are part of the divine. And so as we come into this knowing more and more strongly, and we clear away, we let go of the old difficulties more and more, then that truth of who we are just shines brighter and brighter and brighter. And the more it does, the more, not only the more happy we are, but the more good we're able to do in the world, because we pass that kindness on to others, and they pass it on. It's sort of a never-ending chain. I mean, each of us can think of a kind gesture that one person gave to us in a particular moment that really uplifted, made our day, and how that kind of carried us and automatically spread to those around us, whether we said anything to them or not, you know?
Yeah, I have an example of that.
Yeah?
My aunt was like the most delightful aunt anybody could have. She adored me. And I was a lot older than her children.
Yeah.
She waited to have children for a while because she was going to school and working. But I was just her delight, and she just did everything she could think of for me. And so I really said I wanted to be that kind of aunt for my niece.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I was and am.
Uh-huh. There you go.
But for a lot of other young girls, too, I've just sort of been their auntie. Their auntie Mame. And also, I think so many times someone has done something for me. I'll give you an example. Like, on my birthday, Jerry hid or sent or put under on my pillow or something, a birthday card for every day for, I think it was over a week.
Aww.
And each one of them was such a jewel and lifted my heart so much. And I thought, I want to do that for other people. I want other people to feel like I did when he did that for me. So there was a big surge in the investment in the card department.
And that is so much of the goodness of life. Exactly what you're talking about now is how can we make this a better place? How can we make our direct surroundings a better, happier, more loving, sweet, free life? What can we do? What can I do with my sister, my brother, my mother, my father, my cousins, my friends, my co-workers? What can I do today? What can I do in this moment to help things be lighter and easier and better and freer? You know, I was talking to this guy, I think I actually mentioned him last time we were together here, who sells flowers at the farmer's market. And I think he had a lot of pain in his childhood because he has a lot of defensiveness to him. And he said to me, you know, I take people the way they are. If they're nice to me, I'm nice to them. And if they're not, then they get how strong I am and all that stuff. And I didn't say anything to him because that's just kind of where he's in the right place for his own healing. You know, so I just kind of nod and smile and send him love and silently say, I honor the God within you. I see and honor the God within you right while he's talking. I say, because I know I don't need to know all these gruesome details about, you know, who did the latest wrong to him. but just to say these things to him silently while I'm looking at his eyes and accepting him exactly as he is, I know that this makes a difference. I know it makes a difference. And we can do, if it doesn't feel like we're able to say something to a person, we can love them in that way. We can love them exactly, you know, as much as we can in a silent way. And I went to a concert last night up in Oregon, and as much as I could think of to say it, especially in the intermission, I would say these words from a chant I've been listening to. I changed the words just a little bit, but it is thy love which lives in all of our hearts, and thy light that illumines all our souls. And I just said that over and over a lot, and I could feel things lifting around me, you know. And I saw the whole audience, which was a number of hundreds, I don't know, 1,000 or more, just as goddesses and gods, as the divine. And when we do these things even silently, it makes such a difference. And when we can do things, when we can say things or volunteer in our community in some way that's right for our own heart, or you know, change a relationship in our own close lives, forgive someone. That's just so amazingly important for our own happiness and the happiness of those around us, to forgive, really forgive, and go on and recognize, as Eckhart Tolle says, the insubstantiality of the past. Which is a great way to put it, you know, the insubstantiality of the past. helps us be able to just let things, bygones be bygones, and to forgive and move on. And when we do that, we help everybody else move on, not only the people around us, but everybody in the world. So it's so amazing what we can do, and how much a part of the goodness of life this really is when we do this, and how much it uplifts our own happiness, our own being into ever greater light and joy. Neat stuff.
Well, as you're talking, I'm just getting the time has come for everyone to say yes and give up victimhood.
Yeah, a great huge part of that vast swamp, thank you for mentioning it, is the feeling of victimhood, that we're being done unto, that we're less than others, that others are more powerful than we are, and no one is more powerful than we are. No one, not a single individual, not a company, not anything is more powerful than we are.
Well, it's acknowledging I am the one that's making this up.
Yeah.
If something happens over and over for me, guess what? There are different people there, but the only one that's consistently there is me.
Me, right. Exactly.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Dr. Hugh Lynn says every time I see a problem, I see that I'm right there. Yeah.
Let's talk about this a little bit. Dr. Hugh Lynn says the biggest thing to be healed on the planet is women's hatred for men.
Huh.
And I have known so many women that just reveled in their victimhood.
Yeah.
You know, they would tell you for hours what men did to them.
Yeah.
And this is what men did to me.
Yeah, or, you know, my husband, what he does to me, and I'm still there, right? Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Well, so then, and then Dr. Hu Lin says that everything that, well, lots of teachers say that everything that we need, it's because we're creating it. And so the only thing to ever do is ask for forgiveness of the divine for creating something that wasn't light and easy and joyous and free.
Hmm. And of course, I'm of the place where we don't, the divine never takes offense, so we don't even have to ask forgiveness. We just know that we are infinitely loved all the time, always have been, always will be, and to accept that.
Well, I think it's useful to, like, when we come up and we have something in our life that isn't fully embracing a sweet, free, light life, like, you know, it's a bump in the road.
Yeah.
Is to, we want to release, Dr. Hu Lin says that we're creating from memory,
yeah.
Or we remember we're believing what most people commonly believe about that.
Yeah.
So I think that we're asking forgiveness of our own selves for hurting ourselves with that.
Yeah.
We're asking forgiveness of our own divine self for perpetrating that, writing that into our script, because we know we're the creators.
Yeah, and I think for me it's fine to ask for forgiveness as long as we're knowing that there actually isn't any need to ask for forgiveness from the divine, since the divine never holds anything against us. I think that's actually an enormously important thing for us to realize as human beings, is that this idea of a judgmental or angry God that we're going to be weighed when we die, when we leave our bodies, if we are leaving our bodies, and judged, you know, you did this, you did that. Some people go to hell, some people go to purgatory. This is a truly made up human concept. It has absolutely nothing to do with what God is and how God is with life. It is life. It is each of us. And one of the greatest, most loving gifts of life is that we are able to do with it whatever we choose to do with it, including becoming totally miserable, including believing in a judgmental God, you know. But I think it's vastly important for the happiness and the well-being and the relief, you know, of each of us who have believed this especially, to really come into that knowing that that Goddess, God, life, universe is absolutely unjudgmental forever and forever and forever.
And even if it were judgmental, you know, I learned this from being a parent. My grandmother used to set herself up as the representative of God.
Yeah.
And whatever she said was the way God felt. And one time I burned myself on the burner, and she said, "That's just the way hell is, but you can never take your hand away for eternity." And that was like, if you be bad, well, there were so many things. It was like walking through a minefield that, you know, you would just naturally be bad. It was that belief in original sin.
Yeah.
And I love that Drumvola Melchizedek says that before, now I didn't get this firsthand, but I understand that the Pope apologized and said the Catholic Church made up hell to control people and get them to, you know, contribute and try to buy God off.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yes, and the reasoning was, then you won't spend so much time in purgatory. It's like buy hell a little bit of hell for yourself now, punish yourself in advance, and God won't find so much to punish you for.
Huh.
So it's the believing.
Yeah.
And that we're basically not good.
Yeah. That's been a huge, huge detriment and difficulty for human beings to overcome. Virtually all of us, you know.
Well, you know, the other thing, Joanna, is I've found in with especially spiritual teachers is we want to make sure we graduated and we learned something, and so we'll sort of hold finals on ourselves a number of times to be sure we got the letter and call it an initiation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that the attraction to this is that it's like, if there's no struggle, we won't know we're doing anything.
Hmm. Yeah, and there's also the idea that heaven is boring. It's just sweet. You sit around and play harp, so it's very boring.
or you know, the other thing is, like, I used to be afraid, my husband and I were so different, that if the dust settled, if the dramas were all over, we'd find out that we didn't belong together, you know, if we weren't busy saving the farm or whatever.
Oh, uh-huh.
So we didn't let it be easy. We kind of kept ourselves in a state of emergency.
Uh-huh.
In order to know that we'd always be together. It's very strange.
Hmm. You think Jerry was doing that too?
I don't know. You knew him. What do you think?
No. I don't know.
I don't think I was doing that after a while. I mean, I recognized it, is
uh-huh.
what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
I recognized that and went, whoa, I don't think I want to play that.
Yeah.
But, you know, my biggest work with myself has been to just really accept and be here now and just sort of like settle into the bliss of this minute.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's a huge learning for me too, and for just about everybody.
You've seen that happen before, where you're just feeling this bliss and this love and this alignment with a person, and then the phone will ring. Like, that's enough bliss. Let's do something else now.
Yeah.
But the ego's game is seeking and not finding.
That's right.
And the being's game is soul satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's
great
really,
way to put it.
Is really feeling and knowing and embracing that bliss. And it's also in knowing, in being in that bliss, we won't be megalomaniacs or anything. We'll be wanting to give more and share more and shine more and send that bliss out.
Yeah. Totally agree.
What?
I say I totally agree.
You know what I want to say to people about embracing and fully living a free life is it's so, so, so important to give everybody else freedom.
Yes, that's true.
Especially your most dearest and closest.
Yes. And to encourage your children to see what they want to be, to see what their path is, what is their heart's desire, what is their calling, instead of doing, you know, our original George V, who is also a doctor, just like his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was, you know? Because the family insists on that. And if he loves being a doctor and that's his true calling, then great. But if he doesn't, then he's making himself do it for the family. You have one miserable person there. So he's not going to be the best doctor he can be, that's for sure.
Well, but not only that, it's corrupting to the soul of everyone who someone that insists that someone be a certain way. It's like,
yeah,
this is how you have to look for our family.
Yeah.
And I have seen like movies and Romeo and Juliet has been drawn to my attention this week, and other situations where people were manipulated into being other than they were.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so soul corrupting. For the person who demands it, it's soul corrupting. And
that's
so
what
person,
I would say.
Yeah, and the person who accepts it, it's also soul corrupting. So, and then if someone doesn't accept it and say, no, I'm going to go my own way, then a lot of times the family will just really make them miserable or judge them a lot, you know. So, it's a hard, very hard thing. So that freedom, giving others freedom, what a perfect and total gift. Love and freedom. You know, love and freedom. I love you exactly as you are and exactly what you choose, exactly what you're doing. And, gosh, what an amazing, amazing gift that is to ourselves as well.
Yes, and a lot of people have been afraid to be what we have referred to as loved because that has come with a list of demands. And,
yeah,
and the assurance that we're not really loving the person, we're holding up our picture we love and showing them how to be.
Yeah.
Be this for me. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love you. Do this for me. Or you love me. I'll do this for you.
Or I'll love you if you do this for me.
Yeah.
And, love, the joy and bliss and freedom comes from just pouring out love and wanting everyone to have their true heart's desires.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I just want every wife, every mother, every parent, every husband to be there to serve that love.
Yes.
You know, my experience has been we're always in trouble when we're trying to get something.
Yeah.
From someone. We're only coming from our true self when we're giving.
Yeah.
I don't mean to not receive. I'm just talking about love freely given.
Yes.
Would you talk about, it seems to go here someplace, the five A's. What are they? Appreciation, acknowledgement, allowing.
Acceptance and affection.
Oh.
In relationships. Yeah.
I
don't know who teaches it, so I'm, you know, I don't mean to plagiarize, but someone told me about it, and now we're talking about it. But those are wonderful five A's in relationship. Let's say them again. Appreciation for who the other person is. Acceptance of who they are and what they want, what they do. And allowing is real close to that. And then affection, you know, to at least sometimes during the day, give the other person, demonstrate love one way or another, to hug, to love, to say something that's sincere and true about how wonderful they are. That's a great gift in relationship. And it's really important, you know. A lot of people can love in a way or can feel love, but they don't really show it. They don't really speak it or show it. So that is really a wonderful thing and important.
Yeah. Well, so I just wanted to say, we have a couple more minutes, and it's just coming to me to say this giving up victimhood is sort of like my son, when he was little, wanted police handcuffs, and he was obsessed. He had to have a pair of police handcuffs, and so we got them for him, and he would keep them in his pocket, and then anybody that played with him had to be the one that was handcuffed.
Oh.
And so that's like making yourself a victim in your movie. You know, you're handcuffing someone into being a bad guy. If they're going to stay there in your movie, they're going to be bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just want all of us to allow each other to be the Christ in our movie.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly what will make each of us happy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I give so much thanks for you, Joanna. I give so much thanks for you being
thank
here.
You. And I give thanks for you too, Iris.
Thank you. And I give thanks for the way we just take the lid off for everyone to accept this good. And it'd be good if everyone wrote this down. I am joyfully living and fully embracing a sweet, free, light life.
Yeah, that's great.
Cost of admission, giving up victimhood.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for being on. I want you to tell people how to reach you, and I know you'll come back.
Well, thank you. I do have a website. It's Ascension Mastery. com, ASCENSION, ascensionmastery.com. And I have two books and a number of CD or tape sets either are available, and a bunch of articles that can be read by going to the articles page. So welcome each person. And also there's a link to, I have a business that sells beautiful, beautiful pictures of masters and ascended masters and angels and deities and of many different traditions, the Christian, the Hindu, the Buddhist, the Sufi, and they're wonderful, beautiful pictures. So there's a link from my site to that site.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you, Iris. Thank you so much. Blessings to everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And may all your dreams come true and be a thousand times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible.
And so be it.
So it is.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you, and this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are a thousand times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. All men, all women, all children, and yeehaw!